Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box Stoppage Time. You're with Rob Gilbert, Michael Edgley and Willem van Denderen for our podcast where we go through all the highlights of the past week, our teams, our moments of the week and plenty more. As we said last week, it's a buffet, it's a smorgasbord, it's a feast of football right now. And, you know, we're trying to pick the eyes out of the best ones. I know, Edge, you know, you're always trying to come out of left field. Willem's picked a couple that are interesting to me as well. I've got some good ones too, and you know what, Willem? Nodding doesn't work on radio or on audio.
I was doing some desktop research, Rob, so I had to turn my mic back on.
Excellent. Well, I'm gonna start first. All right. So we've talked about, you know, obviously the Euros and the Copa for the last couple of weeks, and we'll talk about them for the next couple of weeks. You know, there's plenty of games on, plenty of choices, but. Mine is the Group B match of the Copa where Ecuador resisted everything Mexico threw at them. Now, I know you and Edge talked about this in the main show earlier in the week, and Edge was talking about Mexico last week, but I just want to expand on it a little bit. If you didn't hear the match, just have a listen to the way that it finished.
Trying for a desperate last chance opportunity here, and it's a penalty. It's a penalty in stoppage time for Mexico. Do you believe what has happened in Arizona? Wow. With his right foot, watch right there. Yeah, he does get the ball. I don't think this is a penalty. No penalty. Oh, the swing of momentum, of emotion, the pendulum. And it is over in Arizona. Ecuador advances to the quarterfinal round for the third time in the last four appearances.
And look, I know for those listening to American football commentators for the first time, I do wonder
that, well,
I know some of them referring to the goalkeeper as the goaltender at one point, obviously a hockey commentator that they'd wheeled off the bench to cover this. But look, as you guys talked about the last couple of weeks, Mexico's declining results in the Copa over the years have pretty much mirrored their overall regression. Between 1993 and 2007, Mexico appeared seven times in the tournament and they reached the semifinals five times and finished runners-up twice. But in the four appearances since then, they've made it out of the group once, and that ended up in a 7-0 thrashing at the hands of Chile. And this is the big point, the existential crisis that Mexican football is going through right now, Edge. The fact that they're co-hosts of the World Cup. You mentioned that the Azteca Stadium will be the first stadium in international football to host games in three consecutive World Cups. Look, the Mexicans will follow the World Cup no matter what, but they don't want to be humiliated on the world stage. Can they turn this around in 2 years?
No, I don't think they can because the group of players they're working with. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them. Obviously, home nations at World Cups have a big advantage, don't they, in terms of the environmental factors and not able to travel and all of that type of stuff. But the pressure will be on them big time. But what I learned when I was in Mexico, Rob, was that there's a lot of criticism about the local competition and that the good Mexican players are staying at home because like all countries in that part of the world, you've got a few individuals that are super wealthy. All of the big clubs in the Mexican First Division are owned by billionaires, and therefore the decent players are getting way over the odds. They're not leaving Mexico like they used to ply their trade in Europe in particular. So that was the sort of discussion I was getting from football people in Mexico as to the reasons why. And they have extremely low expectations about their national football team these days.
Really, it's amazing. I mean, from a country that you know, Central American neighbours of the great South American nations, they're being outplayed by Canada and the USA. I mean, as we record, we don't know the result of the USA-Uruguay match. The USA might not have got through.
USA-Bolivia. Oh, no, Uruguay, that's right. Yeah, they're in trouble, the US.
Yeah. All right.
To your point there, Rob, with the American soccer commentators, their goaltender, Julio Gonzalez, who'd only made his first three starts, he at least kept two shutouts, so he can be happy with that.
Sure, yeah. Can.
Well done. Nice little additive there, Willem. Thank you. Edge, you've gone to the Euros for your game of the week.
Yeah, my game of the week is Czechia. I'll get it right this week, Rob. Czechia, the Czech Republic, who lost 2-1 to Turkey. There was 18 yellow cards in this game. Absolutely sensational. But those listeners might know that I have spent a bit of time in Istanbul with my work, and therefore I have an appreciation for Turkish football, and they are a sleeping giant. They are just, I mean, football in Turkey is massive. You know, the clubs like Galatasaray, Fenerbahce in particular, Beşiktaş, which Australian fans will know because Aziz Beich played for so long for them, the three big clubs in Istanbul. It's fabled football, but their national team has been crapola, Rob. They've been garbage. But this Euros, they've delivered a sensational performance. They had a very bad loss to Portugal, their middle game 3-0, but they've won the two bookends. And this game against Czechia, it was a wild game. Czechia actually did really well because they had a player sent off in the 30th minute, thereabouts. And please, people, forgive me for my pronunciation because it's not always easy, but Hakan Calhanoglu, he's
right.
Their talisman, hey?
I said Calhanoglu, yep, that's all right.
And Cenk Tosun. I mean, they were just absolutely sensational for Turkey. Yeah, they carried the team, they got the goals, and it was a 94th minute winner that basically sunk Czechia and put Turkey into the knockout phase. They finished second in the group, quite an achievement. And I'm really looking forward to the match that they play against Austria. And I'm just sort of hoping that Turkey is the team that might go deep in this tournament, because the scenes from Ankara and Istanbul, they will be big. And Turkish football, I think the world of international football is better off if Turkish football gets on a roll.
Yeah, well, our listeners will have known the result of that game because of the vagaries of recording podcasts against Austria being played on Wednesday morning our time. So, one way or the other, Turkey is back on a roll. And as you said, they've been pretty ordinary since the heights of the Japan-South Korea World Cup, where they made the semi-finals all those years ago. Now, Willem, how did you pluck St Mirren as your team game? You know, I've mixed this up. Your team of the week, your game of the week, let's flip it around. You've just given it to me in the wrong order. It was Spain-Georgia.
So, I've given it to you in the wrong order. Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. It's, you know, how can I fly like an eagle, Willem? Please?
Yeah, well, which one do you want?
You go with we're doing the order. So let's do the games of the week first, and then we'll get on to your team.
All right, my game of the week is Spain against Georgia. Not often is a 4-1 as entertaining as this. We're just going to get some tunes faded up in the background there because they did find themselves 1-0 up at one stage, the underdogs. And as the great Justin Bieber once said, he had his peaches out in Georgia, and I had the same. I got my peaches out in Georgia. Yeah, nice. Bring that in. The greatest goalkeeper of all time, Mamardashvili, he was at it again. Kvaratskhelia, Kvaratdonna, as you call him, Rob, he was up and about in the forward line, and yeah, they defend like all hell, and when they turn the ball over, they ping the lids like greyhounds and just go like the clappers, and they were one up, a La Normand own goal in the 18th minute, but credit to Spain, they had full faith in their vast array of wingers and mids that they would chip away, and we spoke to Rob Tanner a little bit about this in our interview in the main show, but England, so many good players, just not clicking. This is a side, Spain, with names maybe not of yesteryear, but I think in time we will say Pedri, Nico Williams, Yamal, who's worth $200 billion, if you believe the reports to PSG. These guys will be legends of the future. And the old guys there as well, Dani Carvajal, just ageless and timeless. Even into the 90th minute, he's running over the top of other blokes, overlapping. Jesus Navas at 38, still there. And I think if Rodri can take them to the title here, Rob, he surely becomes an absolute unmitigated legend of the modern game. Georgia continued to offer well into the game, but no surprises. Rodri, Fabian Ruiz, Nico Williams, and then Danny Olmo, who I like and I think would be starting in 98% of national teams around the world, but does have to come off the bench for Spain. Run up the goal tally, and I could not be more excited for their game against Germany. That is going to be massive. So Spain and Georgia, for what they both brought to the table in this one, is my game of the week, despite the result that blew out a little bit.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned last week, Willy Sagnol, their manager, Frenchman, was just loving the attention that they were getting with journalists from all over the world. I think he made one comment that it was the first time he'd seen a French journalist in one of his press conferences as a Frenchman, and at the very same time, the next question was asked by another French journalist. So he might be the replacement in waiting for Didier Deschamps with the heroics that he's managed to get the Georgian side to perform. Now, we've talked a lot about the Swiss side. The team of the week for me is, of course, Switzerland. So, you know, we've been waiting for a long, long time for one of the non-traditional powerhouse nations to negotiate their way through a big tournament and finally lift the trophies. You know, we mentioned 2002. We looked at the last World Cup in Qatar with Morocco doing some amazing things, not the only ones to do incredible work. But, you know, the Swiss side, you know, again, have a listen to the way that they tore apart Italy.
Vargas. Oh, what a super hit! Remo Freuler! It's everything that Switzerland deserve. That was fabulously smooth. And piercingly executed. Vargas. Xhaka. Shot. Vargas! Oh, beauty! That is a Swiss diamond! And the champions fall. Italy's reign is over. Switzerland, for the second consecutive time, are European Championship quarter-finalists. And they were superb.
You know, and that's a sure one way to get through a knockout match, knocking off the champions. Admittedly, champions had seen better days, but this isn't about Italy. This is about the Swiss side. Murat Yakin with his Turkish heritage. You know, Granit Xhaka, as Rob Channer said to us in the main show, he just lifts, doesn't he, and plays with such energy and dynamism and a ferocity that so many other teams just don't seem to be able to manage to harness. You know, Remo Freuler, Ruben Vargas, they were brilliant. It's just no surprise that this Swiss side are going as well as they are when you've got, what do they say, Edge? The whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
It is, but they've only beaten Italy, Rob. Italy didn't even make the World Cup last edition.
Have you been watching this tournament? They almost beat Germany. Mate, they are absolutely humming.
Italy?
No, you know what?
No,
I'm
Swiss.
About.
Come on.
No. Switzerland. I saw them play at the World Cup. They actually had really good results at the World Cup until they played Portugal in the round of 16. And I saw that game and they went down 5-0 and they looked terrible. They have been very competitive for a long time, highly ranked in the FIFA rankings. And I'm probably not surprised, Robin. Here's one for you. I actually think they enter the game against England as favourites.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question whatsoever about that. I mean, again, we talked to Rob about this in the main show. England, I think I used the orchestra analogy, and he said that Gareth Southgate's got the instruments all playing in the wrong parts of the orchestra. They just do not look like a team that's synchronized right now. And that's the difference between the Swiss right now. And to watch a team that doesn't have the big, big names playing, the way that that England are playing, you know, is to watch a team. I think I'm not going to repeat myself, but they are a team, aren't they, Will?
Yeah, and they've all been there for a little while. So Sommer, Rodriguez at left back, Shah, Xhaka, I believe all played at the 2014 World Cup and right through. That's 10 years ago, to state the bleedingly obvious. And Brill Embolo has been there came through a little bit longer, little bit later, but has been there for a long time. So they're all, as a collective, as a team, they're experienced. They're in that probably 60 to 100 cap bracket where you need to be. And yeah, they're on. And Akanji as well is playing in the best system in the world at Manchester City. So that's a pretty solid back four. And then from there, what you can do going forward, a bit of belief. And they're away. And yeah, Italy. Peter Drury said there, Rob, their reign is over. That's going to be the worst reign ever. They missed World Cup qualifying. They scored a couple of goals in their first game and then one in their last three. It's hardly a reign.
Well, you know, they, if you're the title holder, it's
technically there.
Yeah, exactly. So, and look, it takes a lot for me to pick some highlights of Peter Drury's commentary at the best of times. So
it does. I'm surprised with that one.
All right. So now back to where we were, Willem. St Mirren, your team.
Yes.
How do they
get that mighty team from Scotland? Well, the Scottish fans were brilliant in Germany, Rob, and they're not quite my team of the week, but Edge has been tinkering with the rules, so they're my team of the next month to look forward to. And I met one Scottish man on the train from Cologne to Dusseldorf, maybe in his mid to late 60s. We started having a chat and he was lovely. And he said, I'm a proud St Mirren man. He's happy to see Keanu Backus as an Aussie move over to England, but a little bit disappointed in Ryan Strainedge that he hasn't hung around, given he missed the bulk of last season with injury. But the crux of the matter is that St Mirren finished fifth this season, and that means they're looking at European football for the first time in 37 years. They're in the Europa Conference League second round qualifiers with 150 other teams, and they await their next opponents, which are going to be the winners of a two-legged first round tie between Valur from Reykjavik, Iceland, and Vlanasia from Skoda, Albania, which is a lovely town. Those two ties are going to be played in mid-July before the winner meets St Mirren on July 25 and August 1. Now, my mate, I didn't catch his name, but he did say that Albania scares the shit out of him. But he hopes that they do head there because the stadium is bigger and, to quote, we're going to take a few thousand boys. So should they win that playoff, they're going to be one of, and I don't joke here, 60 sides in the third qualifying round. And this is where it gets a bit outrageous. There's seeded and unseeded teams. There's a champions path and a qualifiers path. It's all done through the UEFA coefficient. And we're eventually going to get to 36 sides in the competition proper. So still a long way to go for St Mirren, but European football for the first time in 37 years. Just as an aside, also in the mixer, in that 60-team pot, it reads like a European Australia Cup edge. Some of the names of these teams have got Aktobe from Kazakhstan, Shelbourne from Dublin. I've been there, and Derry City as well. There's the Connors Key Nomads from Wales, and from Gibraltar, the entrants are St Joseph's or St Joey's, as you'd call them around Geelong way, going back to your Cats days, and the Brunos Magpies. So St Mirren in the mixer with this mob.
Fantastic. It is great, isn't it? But how far will they get, Willem? What do you reckon?
Well, I think they'll fancy themselves against either Valur or Vlasnia. And then they've got to play another qualifier. They will be one of the unseeded teams. If anyone understands what I'm talking about, I'd be surprised. I've got no idea. It's like when we speak about the
coefficient.
Yeah, the Asian Champions League coefficient. Well, this is the same. Like, the UEFA Conference League coefficient. It is a mess. And if you look at the Wikipedia page, there are diagrams and graphs going on all
I'm
over
sure
the
world. I'm sure those coefficients are artificial intelligence that have just got way ahead of the human brain.
But if you boil all that crap down, the matter is that these, you know, 60-year-old fans are heading for an away day to see St Mirren play in Europe, and that is very exciting for those involved.
And again, it underscores the same sort of discussion around expanding the Euros, expanding the World Cups, that, you know, these clubs, just like the smaller nations in world football, they deserve a chance. And if they can step up and put a side together, they'll, you know, often lift and give their fans, you know, special experiences. So, you know, I know we're having a bit of a chuckle about it, but I reckon that's a good story, Willem.
Nice. No, as I say, the real deal is that they're booking tickets for a once-in-a-generation trip to watch their side that they've watched their whole lifetime. So that's what it's about.
Yeah. All right, so hot topic time. Now, you and I are going to share this one, Willem, and Edge is going to stray off the World Cup. So mine, I know we talk about VAR a lot, but this one's about re-refereeing games. Have a listen to this.
So as I've said all along, games are not refereed at the stadium anymore. They're refereed somewhere else. And no one will convince me otherwise. It's not even re-referee, it's refereed somewhere else. It's why I don't celebrate goals anymore. I've got to wait for somebody down the road. So I just don't think referees in the stadium anymore have that authority they used to make decisions. They just go, you know what, I'll just wait till see what the bloke down the road thinks. And it's a shame, I don't like it, but it's here to stay, and well, I've got to accept it like everyone else.
Now, that was not Ange Postecoglou in his role providing expert comments for ITV after the Denmark-Germany game. There have been a lot of talking points out of VAR in this tournament, but the Denmark loss to Germany 2-0 was the high watermark. That was Ange 2 months ago. And he said exactly the same thing when he was commentating for ITV. And his point is, that's not why we brought it in. Now, he's not bagging Michael Oliver, the referee, who was called to the sideline monitor to review a handball in the second half of the Danish defender, Joachim Andersen, after he consulted the VAR and this snickometer that we were talking about again in the main show earlier in the week, which just sounds patently ridiculous. Surely they could have come up with a better name, or is that just its nickname? I don't know. The issue, he says, is not making this decision. It's been his issue all along. He said, quite simply, he says they're not even re-refereeing the game. He's saying, Edge, that VAR is actually the referee of the game. Is he suggesting that we're almost getting to a point where it's pointless having the actual referee on the field?
No, it's not.
Well, that's, I mean, but he's saying they're refereeing the game.
Well, they're not refereeing the game.
That's what he's saying.
They're adjudicating using the benefit of video on, on contentious calls or missed howlers. Look, I think Ange is sort of harkening back to the nostalgic days of, you know, when there was no technology in the game and the response of crowds to refereeing decisions and goals was more authentic. The game has gone a particular way. Is the game better off for VAR or not? I'm actually in one of the camps that I think it is, because I think the issue of debate is now where it was supposed to be something that overruled the howler, the referee howler, something that was completely missed, that something the referee misses that the blind grandma in the back seat has seen, in the back seat of the top deck. But it's sort of gone beyond that now, and I think it just needs to be reined in. I think the VAR on the offsides is handled pretty well. You know, they let the game continue and they come back to check the offside before calling it. So we actually get a better result there instead of the offside mistakes that we used to get. But Ange is talking about the penalties that are given or not given, and the influence of the VAR guys with the referee, or you've got to have a look at this. I think he's talking about that stuff. I'd be much happier if referees had more control of the process of VAR rather than the VAR referee. But, it's interesting, mate. We're going to be talking about this forever.
Yeah. Well, the genie's out of the bottle.
The Joachim Andersen one, Rob, yes, the VAR and the snicko, if that is now part of the game, I'm not sure when that came in, but if that's now part of it, that's frustrating. But I don't think the issue there comes from having the VAR or not. That comes from the change in handball interpretation four or 5 years ago. Now, for me, and I'm on my own here because everyone else has shouted it down, that is hand to ball. He's moved that up and it's hit his fingers. And that's not a natural silhouette. He's got an arm out like a goalkeeper. So that's purely subjective.
How did you expect him to run? What was he meant to do with his hand?
I agree, but we can't reach consensus on these things. But that's the interpretation of handball in the law. That's not the VAR. So I think Michael Oliver gets a terrible rap. I think he's really good. And I heard Barry Glendening on the Guardian podcast the day after the game say he's just awful and he represents the fact that all British refs are miles behind the other refs. I think he's really good. And you speak about whether he's refereeing the game. As soon as there's a clip of a leg or a tackle, he's straight in. If there's any argy-bargy between players, he's straight in. He doesn't take any crap and he sorts all those things out. I thought the game flowed really well. So I think he's really good, but God, he cops it.
Well, Barry, I mean, if anyone who listens to our show, who listens to the Guardian Football Weekly, loves it, Barry just likes to take the piss out of anything.
Yeah, Rob Tanner agreed with him. Rob Tanner also said that he thought Oliver was no good on our show. And many, many voices say that he's just, I think it's very harsh. I think he's very good. But that's me.
Okay. All right. Although we're not going to, we'll have a greater chance sorting out peace in the Middle East than sorting out VAR. So, Edge, why don't you bring us home with your hot topic, which is an interesting one for me.
Well, we spoke about this issue on the very first show, Rob. How many years ago? 6 years ago? 7 years ago?
6 years ago? What are you talking about? Nearly a decade ago, mate. Are you trying to undersell us here or what?
Yeah, I know. Anyway, cut a long story short, the National Second Division is supposed to kick off next April, believe it or not. Well, can anyone tell me what's going on? There's just been a very long period of silence, and there's still only 8 teams, 4 in New South Wales, 4 in Victoria. They were entering a process of trying to establish more teams. And since that announcement, there's been no information. So I'm going to pose a few. I don't know what's going on. I've spoken to a lot of people who don't know what's going on. They're only guessing. But can I make I try and find the answers by the answers to what's going on by posing a few questions. The first question is the APL at risk of collapsing, and is Football Australia considering picking up the pieces of the APL? That's one question that might impact the National Second Division. Can they find clubs to get to 10, 11 or 12? Is there actually other clubs that are wanting to put up their hand? And are the financial constraints for the National Second Division so great that it may not happen ever? Those are the questions that I pose on this hot topic, because there has been no information for over 2 months, Willem.
No, seems longer than that. We'll get a little drip feed from a Football Australia press release at some stage, Edge, but I think April seemed outrageous months ago. A couple of years ago. How long has this been bubbling along as an official Football Australia goal? At least two and a half years, and it's not moving any closer.
Well, you would think
it seemed to lose all traction when they brought in those initial eight teams that were only from Victoria and New South Wales for a new national second division. Everyone just rolled their eyes.
Yeah, and look, you know, we're at a point now where I think we're getting to a point where it might not be, it just might be too hard to get it up in time. And, you know, is the APL considering handing back the keys to Football Australia? There is a lot of conjecture about that at the moment.
That would be a massive move if it happened. Well, someone's just got to make an announcement just like they did with Canberra. At least it puts it off the agenda and said, look, we're not doing it now. We're going to kick the can down the road a little bit further. So, you know, if nature abhors its vacuum, doesn't, and if it doesn't, people like us will just fill up the silence. All right, boys, we'll wrap it up. We'll talk next week, Edge. Have a good week in Bangkok.
Thank you very much. Everybody enjoy the Euros, the Copa, and the J-League.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we had a great chat to our good mate Scotty McIntyre earlier in the week about it. What a legend of a man he is. If you want to know about what's going on in Japanese football and Asian football, mate, he is your go-to guy. Isn't he, Willem?
Most certainly is. And that was a good chat. Thank you, Rob. We'll chat next Monday.
And to our good mate Adam Maloney for making sure the show goes as well as it does. Thank you, mate, for bringing it all together. Please subscribe to Box, Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcast. Tweet us at Box2BoxNTS and follow us on Twitter. Make sure you like us on Facebook as well. And join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.